Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Ute fans, before this episode starts, I just want to jump on here. I'm sure all of you have heard the news that broke Tuesday morning that starting quarterback Charlie Brewer has left the program. We recorded this episode the day before, and so we do get into discussions on who should be the starter moving forward, either Cam Rising or Charlie Brewer. Now that Brewer has left the program, obviously Cam Rising is going to be the starting quarterback moving forward for the Utes. Just wanted to kind of clear that up as we did record this before the news broke.
You're listening to the Utah Man Podcast, bringing you the latest news and analysis for your Utah Utes. Now, your hosts, Cameron, Ryan, and Scott.
Welcome on into the Utah Man Podcast. On this episode, we're talking Utes are in trouble, losing two in a row, and looking ahead as Utah gets ready for Pac-12 play. I'm Cameron, and I got Ryan.
What's up, Ute Nation?
And we don't have Scott.
He's vacationing islands this week.
Who's in a worse spot right now? Utah dropping two games or Scott on vacation with in-laws?
Ooh, that's a tough one.
That is tough, but Scott is in Hawaii, soaking in the sun, I'm sure drowning his sorrows of Utah losing to San Diego State in triple overtime, 33-31. Ryan, before we get into the game, can we just talk about the whole new overtime rules?
And oh my gosh.
I'm sure that's I'm going to come across as a bitter Utah fan because Utah lost, but can I just say how college football had the perfect overtime system. Why are they messing with it and on third overtime making you just go for two? Why not keep playing from the 25 each time? I don't get it.
I don't get it either. This was the first, I think I remember hearing that it had to change, but I didn't really pay attention to it. So this was the first I'd seen it actually play out. And it was awful.
It's ridiculous.
And I even tweeted this out. It wasn't because Utah lost. It's just the whole setup. And I guess I get to a certain extent why they're doing it for player safety, but that seems like a cop out. And I don't mind the change to overtime two, go for two, but just keep doing that. Don't just go to a one play and you're done.
Exactly. I don't like it. And maybe they have to get to that point where it's just 2 point versus 2 point, but maybe wait until a couple of overtimes. Why start it on the third overtime?
Yeah, I don't know. It almost lends itself to fluky things happening,
exactly.
which kind of happened. I mean, give credit to San Diego State. They executed their play, but it was a trick play that they won on.
Oh, 100%. But then again, that just a fluky things can happen. Utah, on the field, it's called a touchdown or a 2 point conversion. I don't even know what the phrase they use in the overtimes. they have to go up to Booth and I honestly have my Utah goggles on, but it could have gone either way. I think
it could have either. It was close. And the hard part for me was that it was called a completion or a touchdown or a 2 point conversion, whatever. And to me, it didn't seem like there was enough there to overturn it. And that kind of even made it a tougher pill to swallow for me. I mean, I kind of resigned myself to the fact that we were going to lose because deep into the third quarter, Utah just didn't show up. Down 14 on the road to a Mountain West Conference team. in a soccer stadium. and then they fight their way back. You know, they made the change of quarterback, fight their way back, and everyone gets excited. And then to lose that way was tough.
It was a tough game to watch. Utah's offense, I mean, let's jump into it, Rye. It's a mess. It is an absolute mess. Three games in, no identity. Offensive line, they still don't know what they're doing. They're changing guys around all throughout the game. I kind of feel maybe when they brought Bills in that second half, it maybe got a little bit better. It was terrible, so it could only get better, right?
Oh yeah, it was the first half was just brutal. I mean, and I know San Diego State was bringing a lot of pressure, and they were doing the right thing, because if the offensive line cannot block, as a defensive coordinator, you just keep bringing guys. That's your job. And I just don't understand why the offensive line cannot figure out what's coming at them. It's mind-boggling to me.
No, it's crazy, and it's something that, you know, I think we have harped on this podcast for many years now, the offensive line kind of being the weakness of this Utah offense, and really of this offensive, or really of this Utah team. But to that point where you're saying with the defensive coordinator seeing what's going on, people are going to mirror these two games.
Oh, yeah. Nothing's going to change.
No, what they're see. Constantly bring pressure, and rightfully so. If you mm-hmm. see that weakness on an opponent, you're going to do it. And so far, Utah hasn't figured out. And I think that's the most disheartening thing, is they saw it against BYU. And you think with a whole week of practice, they could make adjustments and kind of coach up these guys to counteract what the defense is doing. And they didn't do anything. It honestly, mm-hmm. and it even looked like they took a step back against BYU.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
The rushing attack was not there for Utah. 70 yards on the ground rushing is pathetic.
No, I mean, San Diego State had a good defense, but considering that the week before, Bernard ran for almost 150, just himself. And I don't know. I just the Harding, as the offensive line coach, has run his course. He's done, in my opinion.
You think he's done? Well,
I think he should be done. I don't think Whittingham's going to fire him.
Wow.
I mean, realistically, what he hasn't had a great record since he put those four guys in the NFL in 2016. We've had trouble every year blocking, and we've gotten away with it to a certain extent because of the talent in the backfield with Zach Moss and Tyler Huntley. I mean, how many times did we sit at games or watch games on TV and Tyler Huntley and Zach Moss consistently made people miss in the backfield and got yardage out of it? We saw it time and time again. Now, those are obviously those are NFL players. Brewer looks a mess back there. And I don't blame him. If I had seven guys coming free on me, I'd look a mess back there too.
Well, and then that's kind of where I kind of feel for Brewer, because yes, he hasn't been playing up to where I think everyone thought he would be playing. I mean, especially this coaching staff. But I don't think you can put all of that on him. His game is he's not very mobile. He doesn't really move around the pocket that well, and so when he's given time, you know, he's very accurate. But I think he doesn't feel comfortable, at least, you know, from what we're seeing. We're just fans, I get it. But from what we're seeing is he doesn't really feel comfortable running the ball, moving around with his feet to make plays. And I kind of feel maybe that's where rising his game, it may be better for this team. I mean, we definitely saw that in the game. The offense started to move the ball, and I think a lot of that had to do with because we had a quarterback in there that was able to kind of shift things around, move around the pocket. And I mean, we saw Rising take a couple runs. And that's something I don't think you get from a Charlie Brewer.
Mm-mm. No, I don't think so either. And I think, and you're right, we did see improvement when Rising came into the game, not only in his ability to be mobile. I think there was, and I don't know what it is, but there seemed to be something different about the mentality of the team when he came in, just maybe a little bit more swagger. I think he has a little bit more swagger than Brewer. Brewer seems more businesslike, just, you know, sit back there and do his job. And I think it seems like Rising plays with a little bit more emotion. And for all we know, maybe the team wanted Rising to be there from the get-go, and Brewer got the nod from the coaching staff. But I don't know. As much as it looked better towards the end of that game, it doesn't solve the issues going on. There are still a lot of problems that need to be dealt with.
So before we get into the quarterbacks, is obviously, you know, that's kind of the hot topic, and especially with Kyle's comments Monday afternoon. Before we get into that, I really want to talk about the rushing attack and the running backs. We didn't really see Tavion Thomas. I think he had one carry, didn't go anywhere. But man, not a good showing at all for the running backs. A combined rushing for 70 yards. Bernard kind of led that group, 17 carries for 47 yards. And I think for me, that's really the disheartening a lot with this offense, is because in against BYU, with all the struggles, you know, they were able to find some lanes to run in, especially Bernard. Against San Diego State, there was nothing. And Utah really needs a rushing attack to help generate some offense for them.
Oh, yeah. I think it was yesterday, I was sitting there watching some NFL games, and it just dawned on me, like, I don't remember seeing Thomas play. Did he even not even get in the game? So I jumped on and looked at the stats and saw that, you know, he had the one carry for 0 yards. I don't even recall seeing it.
Maybe it was
early in the game when the earlier game went late and we couldn't see it.
When CBS Sports wasn't showing it.
Yes. But, obviously he's had issues in the first two games fumbling the ball, and they're probably going to be cautious with that as they figure out how to get him to hang on to that thing. And obviously Bernard kind of broke out and deserves the number one carries. But I think you got to have guys that can mix it up. You got to have that bruising back, which Thomas is, and you got the speed and versatility of Bernard. Like you said, though, the offensive line is not creating any holes for these guys to run through. And if that continues, you're not going to win many games if you cannot run the ball.
No, you're one dimensional, right?
Yep.
And Utah is, like, newsflash for everyone, Utah's not that dynamic of a team, especially on offense, to be one dimension on offense.
You can't instantly switch to an air raid offense. And this offense isn't designed to do that, first of all. And, I don't know that we have the weapons to implement something like that. You've got to have a running game. I was so busy at work, I didn't even see anything about the press conference today. What did Whittingham say?
Well, let's jump into that. We're up against a break. When we come back, we will talk the starting quarterback going forward for the Utes.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, in the Monday afternoon presser for Winningham, Ryan, you said you weren't able to catch it yet. When Kyle was asked on who's going to be starting quarterback, he said they've made the determination they're going to keep that in-house. And
Oh my gosh.
We will know when whoever runs out there Saturday afternoon against Washington State.
Why? What is the point of that?
I don't get it. I don't get it.
There's tape on both of them. I mean, it's not like they can't prepare. Oh my gosh.
And does Washington State really not know who's going to be running out there? Everyone knows it's Cam Rising.
Nothing against Brewer, but if Brewer runs back out there, oh my goodness. it's got to be Rising after that. I mean, essentially, it was a 14-point comeback in just the last few minutes of the game. So you've got to go with the hot hand and the guy who delivered to get you in that position, don't you?
No, I think you have to. I mean, not only to kind of show that faith in your team that, you know, if you are going to go out there and give it your all and the team is having success under you, that's who we're going to play. They can't play this politics game, especially at the quarterback position. You got to get to the guy that, like you said, has the hot hand, the guy that's won the job. And, mm-hmm. you know, so far, Rising has won the job. I was listening to ESPN 700 today, and, you know, they kind of talked about the two different quarterbacks. They both faced the exact same amount of blitzes in the game. I think they both got blitzed 14 times during the game.
Interesting. I didn't hear that.
And Rising had a much better success rate over Brewer over it. And again, that's not a knock on Brewer because I still think he's a very talented quarterback. I mean, there's a reason why he's thrown over 10,000 yards.
Oh, for sure.
It just seems like Rising's skill sets fit better with this team. And where this team is lacking in creating a clean pocket, in keeping the offense, you know, kind of moving along, I think Rising kind of helps you with that. Is Rising the best runner? No, he's not a quote-unquote dual-threat quarterback. I don't think anyone's expecting him to be, but he does move around a little bit more, and he gives you options. You can kind of move that pocket around. You know, we mm-hmm. saw it in this last game. Rising picked up 46 yards on the run. Even though he's not, you know, a Tyler Huntley-type speed, just having that threat of a quarterback that can get you, you know, 4, even 5 yards on a scramble when he's running, that adds another layer that the defense has to account for.
For sure. We saw that in our last two games. BYU, obviously Jaren Hall has the ability to run, and that essentially what put the game away late in that game is his ability to do that zone read and turn the corner. And then Utah got burned on it against San Diego State when they switched their quarterback to the more athletic running type quarterback. And they only threw for 44 freaking yards and they ran all over us. So, I think you've got to put someone in there that can be a little more mobile. But, you know, after you're talking about this, this leads to the next question that I think has to be answered. Maybe it's a two-part question. The coaching staff had to have known how bad this offensive line was going to be coming into the season, right? I mean, this doesn't just show up on game one and you're like, oh, we didn't see this all fall, right? And if that's the case, don't you pick the guy who's more mobile? I mean, how did Cam Rising not beat out Brewer in camp? I know they say it was neck and neck and they picked him because he has a little bit more experience, but I don't know. I think they botched it from the get-go.
That's a fair point. I mean, look at the red and white game and everyone was talking how Brewer went like 18 of 18 or whatever mm-hmm. in the red and white game. And I remember jumping on the Quack 12 podcast talking about that. And they kind of brought me back to earth because they were like, well, he wasn't live, right? I said, no, he wasn't. Like, And maybe that has a lot to do with it, is because he was protected in practices that, you know, they didn't know how bad the offensive line really was.
How do you not know that unless your defensive line is horrible too?
Maybe
there's some truth to that too.
I'm trying to look under a rock, try to find an answer to that question. It is a head scratcher, and maybe it goes back to what we were talking about earlier with Jim Harding. Has he run his course here at the University of Utah? Is it time for a change? And obviously, I don't think that's going to happen in season. Whittingham is very keeps his emotions in check, right? I don't think he's going to do something drastic like that mid-season. But if Whittingham, gives it another go at the end of the season, that's definitely something you got to look at. I think across the board.
I heard Clay Helton's looking for a job.
Oh. Like what I said, Rising's got to be your guy. We're up against it, but we have a special guest on the line. When we come back, we'll bring on our mystery caller.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, Utah fans, calling in from the island of Hawaii, we got Scott. Scott, are you surviving your vacation?
I am, man. I had to get as far away as from Utah's offensive line as possible.
Oh boy, yeah.
I'm over here recruiting.
bring back a few offensive linemen with you, please.
I'm going door to door. Hey, you look like you got good size. You want to come play offensive line for Utah?
Well, if you can't find enough of them, maybe you can find an offensive line coach.
No doubt. What a disaster. That first quarter may have been the worst football I have ever witnessed.
0 yards. Zero.
I mean, it was literally a clown show watching that first quarter. I mean, the defenders were half the time arriving to the quarterback / running back at the same bloody time.
I know. Yeah.
We had offensive linemen running into each other. Nobody knew which direction they should be going. Like, what on earth? It was comical how bad it was.
One of my favorites was when Ford snapped it off his butt and he turned around because he felt that the snap probably wasn't very good. And then this guy just runs right by him. He's not even watching who's blocking.
Oh, don't worry. Daniels had a few of those. I don't know, man. That was so strange. We kind of obviously that bad performance against BYU expected them to come out with some fire, and they came out like they had spent the week in Hawaii. Oh, man.
Something's not right with the whole team. The offensive line specifically, but there's something going on there.
Yeah, something's a little off. And they had their player-only meeting on Monday afternoon. But yeah, I agree, Ryan. It seems like something's a little funky with this team.
Yeah, no, there is. And, obviously it's, as an outsider, we're not going to necessarily know what's going on behind the scenes, but ultimately, I mean, you just look at, I mean, all, it almost seems like the team has just completely succumbed to the pressure of maybe the preseason expectations that were hyped on the program. And I mean, Covey even said that today, said that, you know, that player only meeting was really helpful because it just felt like a burden was taken off everybody's shoulders from the start. And which is a little concerning that, you know, having a little bit of preseason hype was so jarring for this team that it came out like this.
Well, I think you almost have to, I think Whittingham's to blame for that, because in the all the years he's been the head coach, or not the head coach, and even the defensive coordinator here, he's always had that mentality like, you haven't arrived, you got to work for this, and they've always had that underdog role, and now he kind of pumped up his own team and the freaking offensive line. How many times did he say this is the best offensive line he's had in his entire coaching career?
Well, I think Phil Steele, he had Utah's offensive line the fifth ranked in the country going into this. And I think a big reason for that is the conversation he had with Whittingham. So, I mean, it just makes it even, I don't know what to think of it. Obviously, Kyle's a brilliant defensive mind and a brilliant football coach, but I mean, he's playing Brewer over Rising, which makes you scratch your head. And then to pub up this offensive line like he did and then have it perform this bad. I mean, this isn't just, you know, a bad performance. This is like historically, like it's laughable bad.
Take it for what it's worth, but I mean, there were a few media guys on Twitter during the game making comments like, this is the worst offensive line in the country. Yes. Not just the Pac-12, but the country.
I mean, like seriously, I mean, let's take a step back. I know sometimes we like to be a little dramatic on stuff like this, but have you ever witnessed any college game? Have you ever witnessed an offensive line that out of sorts?
No.
Well, and it's been multiple games now.
I mean, there's offensive lines. I mean, you watch Oregon and you're like, dang, man, those guys just know what they do, what they're doing. They provide protection. There's gaping holes in the run game. You know, when you, even if you don't understand what each guy's supposed to do on the offensive line, when you see it, you recognize it. But this was just, I mean, literally, there were guys running into each other. Nobody knew their assignment. The ball snapped. And before they even get out of their stance, the defenders ran right past them. I mean, it was, I don't know what's going on, but I just don't know. Obviously, you can't get rid of Harding midseason because it's just going to create a bigger issue for this group. But I mean, I just don't know how he survives with a performance like this.
Yeah, and we kind of talked about that before you jumped on, and I kind of compared it to what Whittingham did with Holiday at the end of last year. Like, you know, there's some issues, there's some production problems, and a change has to be made. If these kind of issues continue to happen, and maybe it gets better, but this isn't going to be something that's solved by next Saturday.
No, it's not. And I mean, and you guys may have already touched on this, but obviously when Cam Rising came in, you still saw the same issues going on, right? He was still running for his life, having to escape the pocket, move around in the pocket just to be able to deliver a pass.
I mean, he had to do a couple of stiff arms in the backfield just to extend the play.
Exactly. So those issues didn't necessarily stop, but he was able to kind of nullify some of those just with his ability to escape and create more space until he could deliver the pass. And so obviously that's huge moving forward, and that's going to be a big help, but there has to be massive loads of improvement before I think this offense can be maybe even start to live up to the hype that it had preseason.
I totally agree. You know, they're far from the hype, and I think this team is as well. And I think moving forward right now, not I mean, they're starting Pac-12 play, right? So they're 0-0 in conference, which is a good thing. But I don't think we can start talking and start looking at a Pac-12 South championship. I think right now, Utah just needs to stay focused on Washington State and trying to figure out who they are, get that identity, try to start fixing these major issues. And to your point, Scott, they're not going to be changed overnight. And because of that, it's honestly, they got to take it one day, one game at a time. The question is, can they though? Can this offensive line and all the, and can this offensive group come together to start achieving those goals?
It, obviously, I think individually they all have some talent. It's just about being cohesive as a unit, and maybe some of it is they haven't had a lot of time as a unit. I mean, three of them were injured game one, and a lot of them, you know, didn't play together last year either. So,
and I mean, I don't want to derail your thought there by any means, but one of the things that I keep hearing that, you know, this is a young offensive line. We got a bunch of sophomores, guys who haven't played that much, even some freshmen. I guess what I'm wondering is they know the play. You're supposed to go left. You're supposed to go right. They know what the play is, what their assignment is. So whether or not you've made 500 snaps next to the guy next to you, or if it's the first time working with that guy next to you, you both know the play. Why can you not do it?
I think you're making a valid point, and to me that goes back to coaching. If the guys don't know their assignment, and it's been three games where it's the same mental mistake, I mean, yes, the players have to take responsibility, they have to take ownership, but you do have to make that turn and look at coaching. Are they being coached up? Are they being prepared the right way?
And that's where I think they're not. And I think there's some guys that need to find the bench. And I don't care, you know, I mean, you know, we don't necessarily need to call anybody out, but whether you're a senior, a junior, or a brand new freshman, put the guys on the field that can get the job done. Because this is pretty ridiculous that as experienced as some of these guys are, who literally look like they look like they should not be on the field. So let's find five guys, regardless of their age or their experience level, and let's let them play and grow together. Because some of these guys are showing that they're not ready to play. So why do we keep trotting them out there?
The coaching staff really needs to dig deep and find the guys who A, are good enough to play, and B, who want to play and are going to put in the effort to do the job. Because honestly, from a fan standpoint, and I could be way off because they could be trying the darndest and it's just not, whatever they're doing, it's not working. But it almost looks like a lack of effort out there.
Yeah, I mean, you guys have alluded to it. Obviously, we're not well qualified to break down offensive line play, but I mean, something's got to be done. You just can't. It just doesn't make much sense to keep trotting out those same five guys. And I know even in this last game, they switched a few guys around, and you know, I think they're trying to find that great combination. But I think it goes to leadership. You got to look at the leadership of the guys in that unit, in that offensive line room. And if they're not getting it done, you know, go cheer on the guys from the sideline. Let's get guys that know how to play and can get the job done. Cause it's really embarrassing at this point.
This obviously didn't play out well. Cause you think that we'd be able to turn some things around against San Diego State, but the schedule bodes well, if they can figure some things out. I mean, it's obviously we're opening this week at home. Against opening Pac-12 play at home against Washington State, probably one of the weaker teams in the conference. And then you've got your bye week before you travel to USC. So if you can figure out a way to get a win Saturday, and then you've got 2 weeks to figure out some stuff in house. Maybe they can turn the season around.
Well, I think obviously Cam Rising's going to be a big part of that, and yeah, the offensive line, whoever ends up being those guys, we got to start seeing some growth. And let's be honest, they've hit the basement. There's no lower level to get to. I mean, some of that play was horrendously bad. So it's all uphill from here. The question is how quickly can they climb that hill? Is it going to be a slow climb, or maybe some changes, maybe even some new bodies in there? Do we get some surprises, and maybe we get some better play faster? I don't know, but it's got to start.
And maybe what it takes is one of these guys who thinks they're God's gift to the offensive line gets benched, and it's a wake up call.
Oh, I mean, whether that happens, I don't know, but I think it needs to happen. I mean, yeah, I think there's a couple of guys who probably maybe are in their own head a little bit. Maybe hitting the bench for a game might wake them up, might settle some things down. Who knows? And that's ultimately up for the coaches to decide. But again, I think, you know, we're going to see Brewer just wasn't cutting it behind this offensive line. He can escape. And, you know, one of the things that's really stuck out to me about Brewer is his lack of arm strength.
Mm-hmm.
Constantly he's under throwing. I mean, not even super deep balls, but guys down the sideline. I mean, he underthrew in that first half alone, three guys. And which had he led them, I mean, those could have been big plays or even touchdowns in that early on in that game. So Brewer obviously is not getting it done. Rising is what, the presumed starter at this point, except Kyle's still keeping it secret, huh?
For whatever reason, we'll never know.
What's the deal with that?
It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense other than I think he just likes to mess with the media.
Well, I mean, he's the one that kind of looks dumb doing this.
I know.
Let's be honest. You don't have to be a Division I coach to be able to decide who is the better player. I mean, it was striking the difference between the play of Brewer and Rising. Obviously, you know, Rising's going to be the guy. At least I hope so, because if he's not, I've lost all confidence in this staff.
No, I agree. I agree that if Brewer runs, I and honestly, I think Brewer would do well if there was an offensive line that could protect him. But given that isn't the case, you've got to have a mobile quarterback back there.
Yeah, you really do, and maybe that's why Brewer won the job originally, was the thought of having a great offensive line to play behind, and they didn't really need that escapability. But obviously that hasn't.
But honestly, Cameron and I talked about this before you jumped on. How did they not know the offensive line would be this bad? You don't walk out in game one and like, oh, I didn't see this coming.
Apparently they did. I mean, and part of it would be, you know, I don't think our defensive line is any good either. And so they were probably manhandling the defensive line, and the coaches thought, dang, we're good. and not realizing either one was any good.
If we can switch topics here, speaking of not as good as maybe what everyone thought, special teams again.
Oh my gosh.
I think that's kind of being overshadowed by how bad the offensive line and offense was. But they give up another kick return for a touchdown on the season, missed field goals, missed PATs. There's a lot to clean up across the board.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Guys, this is not a good football team.
But you're right. They have not shown that. But on paper, This should be a great football team.
And that's what's so strange, is like, who saw this coming? People were talking about this team as favorites to win the South, you know, as a potential playoff dark horse. as a team that, you know, could go, heck, go to the Rose Bowl. And this, obviously, this goes beyond just Ute fans in general. But it's amazing to me how literally nobody called this. No, there weren't even people out there who thought, I don't know, I'm not sold on this Utah team.
Yeah. I picked him to go 10-2, so they've got to go undefeated the rest of the way.
I had 11-1.
Yeah, Cam's already out of the running.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's your point, I mean, Cam. Special teams is abysmal. And I don't know what, I mean, like, Kyle's a big stat guy, right? He loves his stats. And that's why he kicks the ball to the 1 yard line instead of kicking it out of the back of the end zone. Well, guess what? If you just do the simple thing, you eliminate the risk of injuries on these kickoffs, and you wouldn't have two taken back to the house on you at this point. And that really is the difference in that San Diego State game.
Oh, yeah. It was 10-10 at halftime, and both the touchdowns were Covey's punt return and their kickoff return.
Yeah.
That's how bad it was.
Oh, it was awful. And then obviously, you know, kind of expected, all right, you know, the Utes coming out of halftime would be able to, you know, maybe play with a little bit of fire and turn it around quickly. And San Diego State marches right down, scores a touchdown. And then a few minutes later, Brewer throws a pick six. It's like, oh my gosh. But you know what? Maybe that was the necessary evil that needed to happen to get Rising off the bench.
Who's ever coaching special teams probably won't be coaching him this week.
Sharif Shah is your special teams coach.
Hopefully not this week.
You know what? I mean, you hate to pick on anybody. Special teams are not good. And even, you know, the cornerback position has not been great so far. So there's a lot of items and a lot of areas on this football team. And that's the hard part, is in years past when we've had a pretty average to mediocre offense, we've got a defense that you can rely on, right? And you've got special teams. So you could kind of hide your weakness, play great defense, maybe get a score through special teams, win special teams week in and week out, and do just enough offensively to win a game, which basically Utah has made a habit of that. That's been Utah's formula since we joined the Pac-12. We can't even do that this year.
Well, and I think
you can't hang your hat on any of those.
Well, and I think they also utilize the defense to control field position and give the offense a shorter field to work with. And so far, the defense just isn't doing it. There's one turnover in this game, that fumble recovery for Utah, but Utah didn't even cause the fumble.
No, that was an unforced error that luckily got back.
He hit his own player that knocked the ball out.
It was those big caps from the tight end that jarred it loose.
But luckily, Lloyd was in the right place at the right time.
Exactly. And to your point, Scott, I mean, yeah, years past, it could be, you know, the defense making up for the shortcomings of the offense. And so far this season, just the defense isn't there what it has been. And maybe that's contributing to showcasing how poor this offense really is playing.
Well, and even defensively, right? I mean, San Diego State threw the ball for 44 yards on Saturday. So they did absolutely nothing through the air. But it all came through the run game. Whereas in the past, you know, we've had years where our secondary's been pretty iffy and they give up a ton of passing yards, but yet we've still been able to maintain the line of scrimmage and control the run game. So teams, even if they're successful throwing the ball, we're able to get them off the field. We're able to still control the game because we're able to control the line of scrimmage. This year, through three games, we can't control anything. The people are running all over us, left and right. And I mean, and to that point, San Diego State didn't even need to pass the ball to beat us.
And really, yes, they ran for 200 yards, but they only got one offensive touchdown out of that.
Right, right. But they were still able to stay on the field.
Yeah.
And they were able to get third downs through the run game. And they obviously, yeah, I mean, they didn't put on some great performance, which makes it even more embarrassing that you still couldn't take advantage of this and get a win. You know, obviously, the way the game ended, you know, Rising comes in, and after those first two possessions, you know, he kind of caught fire and just played with some energy. Obviously, the up-tempo offense was huge. It kept San Diego State off balance a little bit. They were definitely not blitzing as much when Rising came in and we started playing faster. I mean, and that's so hopefully Utah can look at that, Ludwig, the staff, and we can see some of that moving forward and stop playing at such a slow, deliberate pace and speed it up a little bit. Keep the defense off balance.
Oh yeah. I mean, you'll see less blitzes if you keep them guessing on what's coming and make it fast. If you go to a no huddle, even if it's occasionally, they can't blitz every time. They're going to be gassed. And it's going to give you opportunities.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and even, you know, Rising on some of those, you know, it wasn't like he was throwing downfield all day long, but he was just dumping, you know, he was just doing some dinks and dunks and dumping some off right of the line of scrimmage and letting guys run for a few yards. You know, it wasn't anything spectacular, but it kept the ball moving and it kept the chains moving. Because that's what big you, through three games, that's been one of this offense's biggest issues is third down. I believe, I don't have the stat in front of me, but I believe they're 11 for 37 on the season through three games on third down conversion, which is horrendous, which is why you're just not able to score points because the offense can't stay on the field.
Well, and part of the problem is they're in third and longs more than they should be. And you can't, it's hard to convert third and longs. I mean, you need to be productive. So it's third and four, third and five, third and three. So you increase those possibilities of converting.
What is the defense going to do on third and long?
Just sit back. They're going to blitz.
Yeah. They're going to bring pressure. And guess what?
Yeah.
That's why we've been so abysmal is this offensive line can't pick up anything. I don't even know if these guys can pick up, you know, a drive through at McDonald's at this point.
All right. So that'll do for our thoughts of Utah so far. Utah will take on Washington State this weekend. Let's dive into that. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back. All right, so Utah's a 14-point favorite going in the game against Washington State. Washington State on the year. They lose their opening game against the Aggies of Utah State. They beat Portland State, and they lose to USC last week. They got up to a 14-0 lead on the Trojans, and I was thinking, oh, maybe Washington State's got something going on. And then they get boat raced 45-14.
By Corner Canyon's homeboy, Jackson Dart.
Pride of Corner Canyon, Jackson Dart comes in.
The former Ute legacy recruit, huh?
But ultimately, I think, you know, with all the problems we're talking about with Utah, starting Pac-12 play, you know, this can set up Utah very nicely. They're not having to go up against a USC or an Oregon, you know, right out of the gate in Pac-12 play. They kind of get a warm-up game with Washington State. Yes, I call it a warm-up game, even though Washington State is fully capable of beating them. I think this is Utah's in a good spot if they want to start correcting and get some rhythm to this team.
Now, this is probably the best-case scenario as far as a conference opponent that Utah can get. I mean, obviously, you know, from how the Pac-12 has looked so far this year, you know, there's probably a lot of cupcakes on the schedule.
Like in Arizona.
But no, this is good. This is, you know, a program that, I mean, they're not going to come out light the world on fire. At least I hope they don't. And what this Utah team needs is confidence. They need confidence defensively. They need to find some confidence offensively. And this is a good opponent to hopefully go out and find some of that. And, you know, I suspect, obviously, with Rising leading the charge, I think this team is already rejuvenated just by him coming in and seeing the success that he had. Even though it was only for, a quarter and a half, I think that is going to be huge for these guys. They're going to be embarrassed. They're going to be hungry. And hopefully there's a full or close to full capacity at Rice-Eccles for this 12:30 game on Saturday, and it's a good environment for this team.
Are you being facetious?
I'm just being hopeful. My head is high in these Hawaiian clouds at the moment, but no, I mean, I think it's going to be huge for these guys to come out and just gain some confidence going into that bye week with USC looming, because USC, I think Dart is going to throw it all over the field on us. And I mean, we're going to have to score probably 40 plus points to beat USC at USC. So,
it's like I picked the wrong year to go to USC.
Yeah, really. I'll tell you, but yeah, who knows? We'll see. But I know I said this last week too, but I think you're going to see a little bit a different team from Utah this week.
Yeah, I obviously we all hope so, but I think we will too, especially after, you know, they had a players only meeting, and you don't have those types of meetings if the players don't understand that change needs to occur.
But you only have those meetings when you're awful.
But no, you're absolutely right. But it's good. I mean, there's some good leaders on this team. You've got Devin Lloyd, who obviously came back to win a Pac-12 championship. You've got Britton Covey, who's an outstanding leader. Those guys, and there's more guys on this. I mean, Keithy, how many guys came back for the purpose of winning a Pac-12 championship? And that goal is still alive, but they've got to really pick it up. And I think this is an opportunity for them to do that.
I missed Witt's press conference today. Did he state that all of their goals are still in front of them still?
Yeah, I mean, he did talk about that, how they're 0-0 in conference play and still have a chance to do something in the conference. And ultimately,
which is true.
It is true. And ultimately, I think this is the week that is really going to show what this team is made of. If they can make changes that, you know, we've been harping on, fans have been harping on, if we can see those changes, even just little ones this week, that will speak volumes, I think, for the rest of the season. If it's the same bull crap that we've seen the last 3 weeks that they trot out against Washington State, then I'm sorry, guys, but I think they're done. I really think that this game is set up to, they can either, can it's they're either going to go up or down. And I think this is the week that's going to tell us what this team is made of.
Well, I think if they don't win this game, they're not making a bowl game. And I'm interested to see, you know, obviously I think they're going to win this game, but the question is, how do they win this game? Is it in convincing style where the defense plays well and the offense finds its rhythm and starts putting points on the board? And is it a convincing win? Because if that's what happens, then I've got some confidence. You know, I don't think these guys are going to win out by any means, you know, with a USC, a UCLA, and Oregon still on the schedule. But if they can get some rhythm, this, let's not forget, this is probably the, I mean, Kyle Whittingham has said it, the most talented roster probably ever at Utah. So if they can find some things to start working and get some rhythm, this team is capable of going on a run and still putting a good season together. But if it's still like you said, Cam, a pretty mediocre performance, I don't know. Going into a bye week, sitting on that for 2 weeks, I don't know. And then you've got a tough USC team coming out of that bye week. I think this game is super critical to not only win, but to win big.
Yeah, this is a make or break for the season. If they come out, even if they sneak out a win, that's kind of meaningless, because what you have left on the schedule isn't going to bode well for you. So they've got to come out in convincing fashion and win this and really boost their own confidence that they can get out there and play Utah football.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's the biggest thing. And that's probably, I would suspect that's what some of this players only meeting was for. Man, it just seems like this team's in their own head right now.
All right. Before we get into our scores for the Utah game, kind of look back at the Pac-12 and looking forward to the games for this week. Ones that kind of really stood out, UCLA drops a game against Fresno.
Oh my goodness, what a shocker. And I watched that. I mean, Fresno State put on a heck, and that quarterback, wow.
Fresno's good. Dude. Fresno's a heck of a team, but 13th in the country, UCLA drops it at home. I told you guys, I wasn't high on UCLA.
That's exactly what this conference can't be doing, is dropping games like that. I mean, it just can't happen.
No, they can't, and it's happening to everybody except Oregon.
Yeah, Arizona State drops the game at Provo, 27-17. Minnesota and Colorado. So, oh my gosh, dude, I was high on Colorado coming in the season. I'm not like high that they're going to win the South, but I thought they were going to be better. They put a goose egg up against Minnesota. That offense, like, we want to complain about Utah's offense. Colorado makes Utah look like the New England Patriots with Tom Brady. That's how bad Colorado is right now.
Didn't they only have like 60? They had 67 yards of offense.
Yeah, they're bad. And they honestly, their defense did enough for them to win A&M last week, but their offense can't do anything. So as much as we want to complain about Utah, it could be worse. And that's in Boulder. And then Arizona, another team that's just, what the crap is going on? They lose to Northern Arizona. How in the world does this conference have two losses to FCS schools? And now Arizona is going to have, you know, they have a quarterback controversy right now as Will Plummer gets in. You know, what are they going to do there? But doesn't really matter. I mean, Arizona is so bad. Does it really matter who's playing quarterback for them?
Well, and obviously, I mean, I think obviously there's issues with the conference as a whole and the quality of football that's been being played in it. And that's been an issue for a little while now. But I think you're honestly seeing a cause of the decision to cancel last season and then come back late and only play 4 to 5 games per team.
Thanks, Larry Scott.
It's catching up with everybody. It's catching up with Utah, you know, and obviously I think the death of Ty Jordan, but I think this COVID thing is affecting the conference as a whole, which is sad because they already have their own issues to begin with. And it's just good. I think it's going to take some time to climb out of this.
And then kind of the big game for the week, USC, as we said, destroys Washington State 45-14. Corner Canyon star Jackson Dart gets in for an injured Slovis. Dart goes 30 of 46, just under 400 yards and 4 touchdowns. What a debut for a true freshman. Holy crap, that was a remarkable performance by Dart. And what's going to go on with USC? Is Dart going to be now their new starter? It kind of seems
interesting to see.
It will be interesting. I mean, you got to kind of look at that as two ways. First, he's playing Washington State, so that he's obviously talented and he'll be the starter at some point. But I mean, also, you just came off of a loss to Stanford. And then your quarterback gets hurt and the backup comes in and throws for almost 400 yards and goes 45 unanswered. I don't know how you can put him back on the bench.
Well, and how many backup quarterbacks are going to get brought in midway through a game and be allowed to throw the ball 46 times?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And, I mean, it's crazy, obviously, you know. But, I mean, he's a talent, and he's going to be really good at USC, and he's going to be a thorn in our sides until he gets drafted.
Oh, but, for sure. Honestly, he's still a freshman, and as he starts to play better defenses and he gets scouted out, he's not going to have those types of days.
No, but he's also supremely talented.
Absolutely.
And he'll go through some lumps if he ends up being the starter moving forward. You know, teams are going to scout him and throw some wrinkles at him, and he'll have his struggles, but he'll eventually overcome that, you would think, and be really, really good, which USC needs, the conference needs, and be kind of cool to see a local kid. It's just going to be at our expense, unfortunately.
Looking ahead to this week's games, so everyone's now in conference play. Probably the game that I think is going to kind of stand out, at least in my eyes, UCLA coming off the loss. Is playing at Stanford, taking on the Trees. And I think that is a very, you know, intriguing game to really find out, is this UCLA team for real, or were the first couple games a fluke? And Stanford, you know, still riding high off their win off USC, taking on the Bruins, I think is a key matchup for this conference. And then another one, Cal at Washington. Again, Washington hasn't played very well this season. They did destroy, you know, an FCS school this past weekend. Can they get up to kind of being a leader in the North and maybe challenging Oregon? I mean, I don't think they can. Oregon's so good. But I think much like Utah this week, I think Washington's kind of in that same boat. Can Washington prove that they're turning the course, that Jimmy Lake is their guy, is their head coach, and they have a good chance, or they have a good matchup against Cal to kind of prove that?
I don't think Jimmy Lake's their future.
Let's be honest. We need UW to figure it out. I mean, they're too important to play this poorly. And again, they're one of those teams, just like Utah. They're way too talented to be playing this poorly. So obviously, whether Jimmy Lake's good enough to turn it around, that's the question. But I would think you're going to start to see some improvement from them. Huge disappointment so far.
Okay, so two matchups I think that I probably are going to be blowouts. Oregon is taking on Arizona. USC's playing Oregon State. If you had to pick one upset out of those two matchups, where are you guys going?
Well, Oregon's not losing to Arizona, so you got to go with the other one.
You know, I'll pick Oregon State over USC any day of the week, because they've had a knack for upsetting USC, and you know, I really like Oregon State. I like their coach. So I'd probably go that direction. I don't see Arizona. Arizona's going to be out of that game midway through the first quarter, I think.
Oh, dude, the Wildcats are going to bear down and they're going to pull that up.
Oh, stop. Oh my God.
Bear down. Could that be the worst thing to ever happen in the conference? At least this season.
Oh, it would. Oh, you might as well close up shop if that happens.
That would be the Pac-12 would be the laughing stock of the country if that were to happen.
Rightfully so. All right, let's get into this Washington State Utah game. As I said, Utah, as we're recording this, is a 14.5 point favorite,
which shocks me. Two straight losses, not putting points on the board, and 14 points.
Well, obviously, Rising got the attention of Vegas as well.
So, Scott, who do you got and what's your score?
Well, I'm sticking with these guys. As frustrating and disappointing as these last two games have been, I think you're going to see something. I'm hopeful for that. So, I'm going to go Utes. We're going to find some sort of offensive identity. I'm going to go Utah 37, Washington State 17.
Ray, where are you going?
I, too, will stick with my Utes. Thank goodness they're playing a lesser opponent in the first conference game. Utah wins it. I'm going to go 31-17.
I definitely agree with you guys are going with this. Washington State gives up a lot of yards. They give up over 430 yards a game. So I think this is a perfect opportunity for this offense of Utah to get in rhythm. Because if it's not going to if they can't do it against Washington State, it's going to be a long season. With that being said, I got Utah 30, Washington State 17. That will do it for this episode. Ryan, where can people find you on Twitter?
At Drum and Feather. Drum, the letter N, Feather.
And Scott?
You can find me at UtahMan_forever.
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Utah Man Podcast, at our home, utahmanpodcast.com. And you can subscribe, rate, and review us anywhere you listen to a podcast, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. We are there. And hopefully Utah gets a much-needed win to open up Pac-12. And go Ute.
Aloha, Utes.
Aloha. Let's go Utes. We'll be till I die, kai-yai.
We're good. Let's cut it.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are their own and are no way affiliated with the University of Utah.